Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to the Driving Maul Show here on Mondays at 8 p.m. where we talk all things rugby. Main things we'll be having a chat about will probably be a bit of club rugby because I've got a guest with me, or at least a co-host with me this evening. But we'll also talk about Super Rugby and also the Pacific Four series as well that has just kicked off today. And joining me is Mr. Harris. How are you doing, sir?
Very good, thank you, Paul. Always a privilege and a pleasure to be on the show. I think I probably missed you the last few weeks or so for some reason or another, but it's great that you've invited me back.
No, it's great to have you back. You went AWOL. I just realised, my hat's on the wrong way around. You see the label. Jeez. Oh, I'm a mess. It's been a long day today. I left at about 9:45 this morning to drive down to Tauranga. And watched two games down there and got home just about an hour ago at 7 p.m. So, yeah, it's been a wet one today. Absolutely bucketed down in Tauranga. I tell you, I was happy to be in the stands, right at the back of the stands as well, nice and out of the wet. But I do need to buy some new shoes because I've got a hole in my shoe and I've got a wet sock. So that wasn't very nice. Look, rookie mistake, folks. If you are going to go to a provincial ground, and by that I mean basically not Eden Park, not FMG Stadium, not Sky Stadium down in Wellington, and not the Tupperware Container down there in Dunedin, basically at Forsyth Bar, basically any other ground, and you know it's going to be raining, take your gumboots. Seriously, put gumboots on. It's definitely worth it, and you're not going to stand out because that's what we do in the provinces, but not me because I'm just... Yeah, a bit of a novice at this living out of town kind of stuff. That was that. You caught some of the games online, Stephen, between the Pacific Four series.
Like on and off. But I wanted to watch the Black Ferns game, so I actually caught it on the free to air channel. Tried the pirate thing for a while, and it worked for a little bit before that link actually fell over. But it's interesting. We got some interesting thoughts on that Black Ferns performance.
Cool. And so one of the things, folks, that we got to experience here in New Zealand for the first time, really, something that I know has been a problem in Europe for a very long time now, which is basically... you've got different rugby competitions on different TV channels. So BT Sport or Sky. I've forgotten what the funny channel that has the URC over there. Maybe Satanta or something like that. And you end up having over in the UK, you end up having these rugby across about four or five different TV networks. And having to pay for them. Over here in New Zealand, until the last Rugby World Cup, everything that anybody wants to watch has been on Sky. Now, there's been little bits on Spark. I mean, they've also had the Junior Rugby World Championship, but let's be honest, who watches under 20s? Not very many people. They also had the some of the European Champions Cup, but again, over here in New Zealand, no one's really that interested in that. So, but today, people were like, "Oh, the Black Ferns, and they're not on Sky. How do I watch this? What's going on?" The reason for that is that Pacific Fours series. Geez, it's taking me a while to get used to this name. It's not PS4. That's a computer game. It's a P4S. But anyway, it's a World Rugby tournament. It's not a New Zealand rugby. It's not a Sanzar tournament or anything to do with New Zealand rugby, which is an interesting one. So World Rugby had their officials around. And whilst New Zealand Rugby clearly is helping them run it, it's not their event. So that's why it was on Spark, folks, and not on the old Sky. But yeah, that definitely threw a bit of a what's the word I'm calling about? A bit of a spanner in the works for some people, Stephen.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think we all kind of just took it for granted. It's a very similar situation to the New Zealand England cricket series that's currently on at the moment. Unless you've got Spark Sport, I think you've pretty much got to rely on everybody else. Just maybe highlights that pop up on the news, or an example of the women's tournament at the moment, free to air. That's if they chuck it out there.
Yeah, look, I think cricket, they kind of got used to that now, because Spark has gone and bought cricket. But for rugby, it's a new thing, this, folks. So that was going on. But before we kind of get into those games, this weekend, Stephen, what did you get up to? What rugby have you been at around the ground?
Yeah, well, I put a bit of focus onto the – I didn't want to do too much travelling this year with just being busy and all. So I put a bit of focus into a bit of local rugby here in Auckland. Of course, it's the Goodyear Tires Auckland Premier Men's club competition at the moment, and they're not quite at the halfway mark, but I popped out and took in the Waitemata Grammar Tech game on the weekend, round six of the competition. And one of the reasons I actually popped out there, because one of the Waitemata players was doing something very, very unique. Vaioni was playing his 100th game for Waitemata. Now, nothing unusual about that, but
that's a pretty impressive shift for any player.
Yeah, it is. I mean to say, it's definitely unique. But what makes this even more unique is he's played another 100 games for another club. So
that's what makes it unique.
That makes it very, 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 very unique. Of course, Vaioni started his rugby with the Waitemata Club. You can check it out on, we've got that interview on NZ Sport Radio if you want to have a quick look at that. I'm hoping to maybe share it with the legend of Marty Banks. I've passed it on to Alex as well, so that'd be great for the channel if he could share that particular video, because it is impressive. And of course, I caught up with Vi at the end of Saturday's game. Not quite the result they were looking for. Went down 29-17 to Grammar Tech after they actually had led at halftime by 10 points to 5, but Grammar Tech showing why they're one of two unbeaten teams in the Goodyear Tires Auckland Premier Club competition. But yeah, it was a very emotional interview, if you can imagine. I've known Vi for quite a few years, had him in the under-21s back in 2000, so I don't want to give his age away, but maybe I have. But it's really, really impressive at this time that a player would play 100 games for two separate clubs. And listen, if you're tuning into the show, and if you know of anybody else out there who's achieved that particular feat, gee, let us know, because having followed the club game for a long time, I can't recall of anybody who's actually achieved that.
Yeah, look, it's very rare, let's be honest. If you've played 100 games for a club, that generally is your club. And if you're going to play another 100, you generally play it for the same club. I mean, I know a couple of guys here in Waihi who have racked up 200 games. The 200 game thing is rare. Let's be honest, there's not many players who survive that long. But what makes this one especially, as you say, especially different is the fact that he's done it for two teams. I mean, 100 gets you, obviously, as you're over here in Waihi. It's so what? Actually, look, at MPC you can get a blazer after about 16 games. In Waihi, it takes you 100 games to get your blazer. So so look, it's one of those things that the quite a few players do get to, let's be blunt. But to do it in two clubs or to do 200 is, yeah, that's a different level entirely.
And Paul, it was great. It was actually great to see at the club that he had some old teammates from Waitakere turn up in their blazers, and they had many of the probably 80 or 90% of the Centurions from Waitemata all turn up for the presentation that evening. So it was great to see. Like I say, they couldn't get the, unfortunately, get the win for him, but big ups to Grammar Tech, who are going really well at the moment. I think it's only a matter of time before they're digging really deep into their depth at the moment. And I'll be heading out to Ord Arcade Domain on the weekend because the two top sides, or the two unbeaten sides, beg your pardon, University, who are leading the table, played six and won six there at the top of the table, 29. Manukau Rovers, of course, another friend of the show, Boa Athu, who's involved with Manukau Rovers. They're travelling along quite nicely at the moment, but they have had the one loss, and Grammar Tech sitting in third place on 24 points, but they do have a game at hand. So that game on the weekend, Paul, is going to be an absolute cracker.
Fantastic. So get down there if you're in Auckland, get into Araki Domain next Saturday for that game. I will be in I think I'm going to be in Waihi, videoing the Bees, but the A's might grab me around the neck and drag me to Whangamata to video them instead. But I'd rather stay home in all honesty. Yet a little tip here, Steve, Robert Bull's there saying, check out Noah Foster playing for University. He's apparently a bit of a good player. So this weekend I was down at for Waihi videoing their A's as they unfortunately couldn't get the first win of the season. Were doing really well in the first half, but Pyrrha came back in the second half and put them away. Unfortunately, our Bees are travelling much better, but they also got beaten at the weekend by Mercury Bay. Mercury Bay, they set off for their game. They met at the club rooms at, I think it was 8:30 in the morning, to head off to Mercury Bay. That's a hell of a shift for that one. So, hat tip to the boys for just getting up there for that game, because Mercury Bay is a long way from Waihi. It's the other end of the, basically the other end. We're at the southern end of the province, and they're at the northern end of the province. So, yeah, it doesn't help being at one end of your province when you're having to play these sort of games. So that was that's where Stephen and I were on Saturday. I do encourage you to get out there to your local rugby club and have a watch. You generally get good quality rugby and also a good chat in the bar afterwards as well.
I can testify to that. I even had a former All Black and Strawn buy me a beer. So there you go.
Oh wow! Fantastic. Unfortunately, I had to buy all my own beers on Saturday, but I did drag my daughters along, made them walk, so that I didn't have to worry about driving home. moving on then to the Super Rugby that I think a bunch of you will have. Archie, and also folks, if you happen to be around in Waihi this Thursday, the place to be will be at the rugby club, because straight after training this Thursday, I will be hosting an edition of Do You Know Sport, the famous and world-renowned New Zealand Sports Radio sports quiz. So we're going to be hosting that between the A's and the B's. There'll be a feed on as well, folks. So if you want a free feed, a drink and some quality entertainment as the A's and B's take each other on, dial in.
I was going to say, Paul, if you've got, for those viewers out there who've got absolutely nothing else to do and there's nothing on television, go back into some of the archives and check out those shows. Yeah, some of it's riveting viewing. Let me give you the tip.
Oh, harsh. Oh, God, no. Perhaps it's more of a more participation sport than a viewing
sport. If you want a good laugh.
Anyway, moving on to the Super Rugby. We kicked off on Friday night with the Crusaders hosting the Reds. Now, look, they'd beaten them the previous weekend, and I think we all knew that this was going to be a very tall order for the Reds. Haven't beaten the Crusaders since the final back in 2011, I think it was. You could get the Crusaders at $1.06. So it tells you how heavy favourites they were, and the heaviest favourites of the weekend. So unsurprisingly, the Crusaders won this one at 37 to 15. The Reds, 86% tackling. They missed 22 tackles. They only won half of their scrums, 5 out of 10. They won 9 out of 13 lineouts, so lost 4 lineouts as well. Look, if you're going to miss that many tackles, have a set piece that isn't functioning, giving you no platform at all, you're going to be in trouble against any team, let alone the Crusaders at home. The Crusaders roll on and put in a good performance.
Yeah, oh, very much so, Paul. The disappointing thing about it, you could argue that the Reds actually scored the two best tries of the game, and one of them was off a very, very good set piece with really good ball movement, which manipulated some space for Dalgunu, and he walked through a giant hole. And of course, they're trying the first half off a Jordan Pataia break. They actually showed what they could do, Paul, but you're dead right. Most of the time, they were making a lot of tackles. Their set piece was under pressure, and that's pretty much what the Crusaders bring to quarterfinal football.
Yeah, I think perhaps one of the things that came out of this one, I think it shows that Goodhue is short of a gallop heading towards the All Black season, which is a bit of a worry. Now, obviously, Jack Goodhue coming back off injury. He got caught out a couple of times, but in the last couple of weeks. So I think some question marks as to him. Some real questions with Antoine Brown out injured as well for that midfield pairing of the All Blacks. We'll get onto the Blues later, where some people think the answer is. But it's going to be interesting to see with some players like Jack being a bit short of the gallop. It'll be interesting to see what selections come up with the All Blacks. But Crusaders cruise on and get themselves a semi-final on Friday night at home. Up against the winners of our next game.
Paul, just before you, the probably the only real damp I can really think of for Scott Robertson and his coaching staff is that injury to Ethan Blackadder. We all know he's the real workhorse of the pack. Like Anton Leonard Brown, I think he's probably also going to be a loss for the All Blacks as well, not knowing how long that injury is going to keep him out. It'll be interesting to see, but such as the Crusaders' depth, they'll still be able to roll out Tom Christie, and they'll have Callum Grace, and of course Pablo Matera as well as the loose forward trio. Not too bad, eh, when you can lose an All Black and still feel the loose forward trio like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. To be fair to the Reds, look, it wasn't until just over 20 minutes to go that the Crusaders pulled away. And they were leading, but they're only leading 16-5 by a point. The Reds missed a penalty as well. But it was that last 20 where obviously the benches unload. And that's where the Crusaders showed that they were a step above. Next up was the Chiefs versus the Waratahs. The Waratahs, the most improved team this season, let's be honest. And looking at the stats, I was driving up to I was going back for, I was obviously at the YHE, so I was having post-game beers and stuff, and so I wasn't really paying too much attention to this one. But looking at the stats on the whole, not a lot to pick between these two teams, except perhaps around the turnovers by the Waratahs, not quite so able to look after their pill. Gave away a few more penalties, and it was 10-10 in the first quarter. But a purple patch for the Chiefs ahead of halftime, 17 unanswered points. Saw them pull away, and the Waratahs just didn't. Once they were three scores behind, it was just too much for them to try and claw back.
Yeah, I agree, Paul. Listen, it started well for the Chiefs. Good, very good set piece try to Brad Webber. Boy, didn't he half show some pace when he basically hit that hole. And I thought then basically get them kicking the conversion 10-0. And then we saw the Waratahs.
So just say, I've got to be careful with Brad Webber. I suggest he was enjoying the space that the forwards were giving us. He told me off saying he'd enjoyed that all his career. I was like, okay. All right.
I actually thought he looked really sharp, showed some serious wheels.
I think he's getting back to some of his best form, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, very much so. But, you know, credit to the Waratahs. They came back and they hit back well with a really, really good try, kicked down the blind side, which was picked up by Dylan Peach, who's been a bit of a revelation for them this year, coming across from the Australian Sevens program. And they scored and they got themselves back to 10-all. And then decided from the kickoff that it was a good idea to move the ball inside their 22 and one misdirected pass. And of course, Luke Jacobson, that came a little bit late. I think that was Nankerville that jumped on that. But, you know, that little double shot between the 22nd and the 34th minute, yeah, really probably just killed off any chances that they may have had. And of course, the penalty right on half time just basically stretched it out beyond the three try score mark.
Yeah, and so the Chiefs they have been whilst they've been getting the results, they've not been putting in performances. The first half of the season they were performing well. Second half, they've had a lot. They've not coped with. I mean, all the teams had the COVID injury disruptions, but clearly the Chiefs are a team that haven't coped well with that. However much the players and coach will say, we trust our entire depth and all of that kind of stuff, it just hasn't worked for one reason or another. And I had a chat midweek last week with Cortez Ratzmer before the game, talking about how the Waratahs. You have to be very careful around the Waratahs, one of the best pilfering teams, one of the best tackling teams. Now, so clearly breakdown was going to be a big one for them. So I think they were concentrating on that. Mr. Ball over there in Hamilton's called it an ugly win. I'm trying to find Cortez Ratzmer's interview. Perhaps I've not put it. Oh yeah, they have that. So that you can get that Cortez Ratzmer interview over on New Zealand Sports patreon.com/NZ Sport Radio, talking about his first season in Super Rugby. Also over there, by the way, is my reaction to the Silver Lake vote, and also William Habili also talking about his first season in Super Rugby as well. So a few interviews there for supporters of New Zealand Sports Radio. The Chiefs will be happy with any kind of win, get themselves into the semi-finals. Clearly, they'd like to have a home one, traveling down to the Crusaders, and from memory, they have beaten the Crusaders down in Christchurch relatively recently. So whilst it's not the ideal matchup for them. They did beat them down there 21-24 back in early March, so they know they can do it.
Yep, don't disagree with you, Paul. I was going to just touch on that Waratahs team. Boy, they've got some good young players, haven't they? Moving forward, you know, you kind of we've already spoke about a couple of the younger players, but man, Will Harris with that runaway try, didn't he half show some pace from 50 odd meters out? And if you sort of go through the rest of their side, you know, Edmund at first five is only really in his first full season. Man, I reckon the boy out on the wing, Nawanga Itawasi, is just basically improving with every game, and I think he's going to be a really really top winger for a long time, and I can see him playing for Australia in the future. His rise has just been amazing, and of course, Dylan Peach on the other wing. Ben Donaldson was probably playing out of position at fullback, and I think he got probably caught out a few times as well. But you also look into their pack as well with Charlie Gamble as well, and even in their front row, you know, the likes of Bell and Johnson Holmes as well. Paul, and listen, I think they've got a, despite getting knocked out in the quarterfinal, I think they've got a lot to look forward to.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I mean, here's a team that didn't win a game last year and they made the quarterfinals this year. So, came into this one as with everyone actually saying, look, the Chiefs have got a real game on here. Obviously the Chiefs are favourites at home, and you'd expect them to win, but, they were $1.20. So, but not as much favourites as Blues and the Crusaders. Look, people knew they had a bit of a game in their hand that they would have to. This wasn't a gimme. Last year would have been considered definitely a gimme, and the question would have been how many. I think what's really good here, what you're seeing here actually is a unexpected benefit of them not spending up to the salary cap a couple of years ago. I can't remember if it was last year or the year before. That basically they decided that they weren't going to spend because of the old COVID. And so they did blood a very young side. Now, it cost the head coach that season his job because they did that. But that did mean they had a whole bunch of young players who got Super Rugby experience earlier than they would have done otherwise. Add in the players like Hooper coming back, Hannigan, and a few others. And hey, Presto, you had the makings of a side heading in the right direction, like the Reds were about 3-4 years ago.
Oh, absolutely, Paul. It's fair to say they took a hit by taking on board those young guys. But boy, look at the fruit that's come to bear through that idea. You know, sometimes paying top dollar, you know, guys aren't going to be around for long. They're going to pick up bigger contracts again, and to try and pay up money to keep them there is not always a great idea.
Yep. Before we go on to the next game, Maurice Bass says, boss, I'm so glad our provincial teams don't play New Zealand teams anymore. I think he's from South Africa. now's the test. Now the test is more significant and important. Also, New Zealand don't get to use our forwards to play. Getting used to our forwards play, is what we're trying to say there. URC is very popular here in the Republic. Look, I think actually it's been good for both sides, domestic competitions, because you're playing teams in your own time zone, which means fans can watch all the games. Yeah. You're not playing games at 3 o'clock in the morning that no one can watch. So I think from that point of view, now, do I think it's going to hurt the All Blacks? Absolutely. I think it's going to hurt the All Blacks because, the players aren't used to those forwards and aren't used to playing after that travel. So it's going to be more difficult. So they're going to have less practice at it. They'll be less good at it. So it's going to be a problem for them. But from a domestic competition point of view, I think it's been good for both sides on that point of view. Moving on then, after that, we had the Blues versus the Highlanders. Now, this week, we had a bit of disagreement on this one in our live chat. I was basically coming to this game saying, look, if the Blues lose, this one is a how many. This is not whether the Blues will beat the Highlanders. A lot of Blues supporters with a bit more time under their belt than I have had with following the Blues were perhaps a bit scarred by some previous experiences and were like, no, Paul, the Highlanders could turn up. And I'm like, the Highlanders coming to this game had beaten three teams that didn't make the finals, and the Reds, who, let's be honest, in the second half of the season have been in free fall. The Highlanders were a bit of a mess, really. Let's be honest. And we talk about the attack and Bowden Barrett scoring a couple of tries, RTS getting his first ever try. But at the end of the day, this was a massive defensive shift. They only allowed the Highlanders two clean breaks all game, didn't let the Highlanders over the line, and really shut out the Highlanders. And fantastic defensive shift by the Blues team.
Yeah, it was. Listen, it was a good start. It's fair to say it was a good start. From the Highlanders, they were basically getting stuck into a Blues team that looked a little bit nervous going into quarterfinals, and they were making a lot of handling errors, which was basically giving the Highlanders a lot of ball, and they were asking a lot of questions. But to be brutally honest, I don't think the questions that they were asking were actually causing the Blues too much distress in terms of a defensive pattern. If you look at the sort of breaks, you had the odd individual break, but I think the farm was pretty well sold when Andrew McAleo was given a red card on the 22nd minute, because it was 8 minutes later where the Blues really got their game going, and those two tries before half time. And I think we knew it wasn't a case of whether they'd win or not. It was a case of how much they would win by.
Look, I had someone put on Twitter going, "Oh yeah, if they hadn't picked up that red, well, yeah, if my aunt had balls, then she wouldn't be my uncle, or whatever the saying goes. If buts and maybes. Look, he picked a red card. It wasn't there was nothing. There was, I don't think people were arguing about the red card. So look, it's a you can have as many if buts and maybes around all these games, but it did happen. That's what happened, and the Blues went on. Interesting comment by Nocturnal Rights. He's concluded that Tony Brown is not a very good selector this year. Gregory has been playing well on the wing, moves to the midfield, misses nine tackles. Blunt back line. Oh, well, Nariki is back next year. Now, look, I'm just wondering, is Tony Brown a bit like Wayne Smith? Fantastic in the sort of background as an assistant coach, not having to deal with the media and the press so much, not so much a head coach, but perhaps one of the better assistant coaches around to run things, Stephen.
Yeah, it's hard to know. Listen, at the end of the day, you've got to have the cattle pull, and I really don't know if he actually had the cattle. I've just sort of looked at a lineup from last year. This is a backline from last year. Gilbert at fullback, Tompkinson, Nariki on the wings. The midfields were Michael Collins, who had a very good season and a good combination with Scott Gregory. Their first five combination was Mitch Hunt and Aaron Smith. And you go into their pack, their middle row was Dixon and Parkinson, Tokalahi, Ash Dixon. That's a real big loss for them this year, having that leadership. And if you also remember, they had the Japanese international, Himano. So it's got on, in terms of personnel, it's got a different, far different look about it. And it's fair to say they've had some key guys out injured. Of course, we saw a little bit of Frizzell make a bit of a comeback, but you know, coming off the bench, that was probably more about not having any game time, and probably if they were still in the contest, they were going to roll him out. So for me, it's come down to depth at the end of the day. I think he's probably made a few selection errors, but man, he could have done without a red. He could have done without Sam Gilbert getting himself suspended for 3 weeks, and probably both, you know, around that first five area, their game drivers probably just a little bit inconsistent, Paul.
Yeah, when you sort of list those names out as to the lineup, they've lost about half their players from last year of a starting 15. So yeah, you can imagine. Yeah, it takes time, and they've not to put that in. One of the interesting points that Ben Darwin and the Game Line Analytics have been saying is that the connectivity between New Zealand teams this year is lower than it has been in many years, and that's without the COVID changes.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
That was squads before the season started. Add into that COVID changes, which mean that teams have had up to 47, 48 players in there when they should, which is about 10 more players than they should do. Some of those players arriving on game day sometimes, and you understand why this Super Rugby season perhaps hasn't had the same level of play that previous years have. If you add in that connectivity issue, then clearly, players heading overseas earlier, something that needs to be looked at now. Probably possibly helped by the fact that in the Premiership, they've reduced their salary caps, and apparently there are 20 more players. There are 70 players, and it's across 13 teams that don't have jobs for next year, and that will be forced to be heading into retirement. Normally, it's 50 that they lose each year. So that's a lot of players that are not getting re-signed. So the demand for overseas players is going to drop. Now, your demand for your Bowden Barretts, your Dave McKenzie's, your Dan Carter's, sure, they can walk in under any market conditions and get nice paying jobs. It's not them that you're talking about. It's the lower down players or the squad players that you're talking about, obviously. So maybe we'll see some more retention over the next couple of years. But then again, Japan is ramping up as a venue, so who knows?
Paul, just on that Blues performance, one player I've been super impressed with in this 2022 season, and I thought once again he was close to the Blues best on Saturday, not despite the feats of Bowden Barretts, and Stephen Perifetta. He just does not seem to be putting a foot wrong at the moment. He might be in this really unlucky situation at the moment where the All Blacks seem to have cover. But, you know, he's a player that maybe not so much this year, but maybe next year, or even after the World Cup or post-World Cup, beg your pardon, that I wonder if he has another year of consistent form, he comes into that All Black room.
Look, I think he's always had consistent form. I think he's just not had consistent injury issues. And so he's been injured too much and hasn't really put together a season until this season. At the Blues. So I think what we're seeing is, he is getting older and getting better, but also the fact that he's just not been injured this season, I think it's been a big thing for him, which is fantastic to see. It's funny, isn't it? We're talking about an All Blacks team that's under pressure, that's dropping down the rankings, that's not as strong as it used to be, and yet we're saying, oh, look, there's plenty of talent in there. So you wonder where the issues are. But obviously that's pointing at the coaches, folks, if you're wondering. So it will be interesting to see how that how that all pans out. You're right. It's you think about the has he got an opportunity at fullback? Well, you've got Jordy Barrett and Will Jordan back there already. So is there a space for him there? Is he got a space at 10? Well, obviously you've got Richard Mwanga and Bowden Barrett there, and then you've also got Damon McKenzie coming back from Japan. So, you've got to say he is stuck behind some players at the moment. Let's hope he doesn't head overseas because of that. That's all I can say. Because you say he's playing very, very well. Heading into the final game of the weekend, then is the Brumbies versus the Hurricanes. The Hurricanes put in a massive tackling shift in this one. 95% tackling, just didn't miss tackles, which made it tough for the Brumbies. And they did take the lead early on, heading into half time, 15-22 up. Now, helped by Ikitau's red card, a player who's been key to this Brumbies defence. But just too high. A lot of people will say, but Owen Franks did the same thing as he did. So why did he only get a yellow? Well, yes, good question. We could head down the rabbit hole of refereeing inconsistencies all night long. We won't go on.
Paul, I was going to say, probably the only thing for the Brumbies, I'm not too sure what sanction he'll get, but there's probably a good chance he'll miss the semi-final against the Blues.
Well, semi-final and final, let's be honest. That's because you're looking at on average, 3-game ban for these kind of things. In the second half, then the Brumbies played most of this game where they wanted to in the Hurricanes half. Sure, the Hurricanes kept hold of the ball better in that first half than the second half, but they've got the game players to score from distance, haven't they? And some of their tries can be quite often there. If you want to go try the season, you put your monies on coming from the Hurricanes, but you can't keep doing that all game long. The Brumbies got themselves back into on terms just about a quarter an hour to go, and then grounded out. It does help having a perfect set piece. They won both their scrums, all 13 of their lineouts, and only seven scrums in this game was very good. The Hurricanes, 14 turnovers is a problem compared to only 7 from the Brumbies. That tackling and only allowing the Brumbies one clean break was fantastic. But as Knoxon Wright says, you don't, if you're using a line out drive, you don't need a clean break to score, do you?
No, you don't. One other thing the Brumbies do really well is they, one of their strengths is throwing numbers at breakdowns. They make the breakdowns really uncomfortable, and of course during that first half that they sort of caught the wrath of Paul Williams the referee, and of course the local crowd weren't too happy, and of course their temperature raised even further when Owen Franks was given a yellow card when they were probably expecting a red card as well. But listen, credit to them, they actually kept their composure. And to be really honest, they finished well and truly over the Hurricanes.
They did. Now they get to travel over to Auckland to take on the Blues. Unsurprisingly, folks, we had the four home teams all winning this weekend. There's a good reason why they're the home teams, because they've earned it by being the best teams during the season. So it was that was expected. Similarly, this coming weekend, folks, two games where you've got to say the top two teams, the Blues, haven't lost since round one, and the Crusaders, well, they're just the Crusaders and they're in finals footy against a Chiefs team that isn't firing properly and on all cylinders. So it's hard to look past two home wins this coming weekend as well, I would say. Let's just wait and see on that one and enjoy the two games on this weekend. So the Crusaders versus Chiefs Friday night and the Blues versus Brumbies on the Saturday night, followed by the Pacific Four series on Sunday with two more games up in Auckland that I will be at. A couple of news items that Simon has pointed out in the live chat. The South African teams will now be part of the European Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup up in Europe. So the European Cup includes teams from Africa now. Now, for me, the Bulls, Stormers, Bulls, Stormers, Lions, and Sharks are in the URC. The URC is one of the three leagues that goes up into the European Champions Cup. So, yes, they should qualify just like an Irish team would, a Welsh team would. The Cheetahs, though, who aren't in the URC, it's a bit more of a head scratch on that one. And that seems like the South African sports politics playing its wonderful game that helped shape the Super Rugby into such a wonderful conference system many years ago. So that one I'm not so sure about, but that's happening. He also told us that Malaysia had lost to South Korea in the Rugby World Cup qualifiers. I think that means that South Korea probably playing Tonga now in that playoff. Boy, oh boy, Major League Rugby has its first major scandal. The Austin Gilgronis have been disqualified from the playoffs, and there is very little news as to why. The only news is that it's apparently around salary cap. Now, considering all of the players essentially contracted with Major League Rugby, and each team gives Major League Rugby money for their salaries, and Major League Rugby pays all the players, it seems a bit it seems strange as to how that has happened without it being clearly intentional. So, the Austin Gilgronis are up for sale this summer. And so the last thing that the owner wants is for them to get to be banned from something. So apparently he's threatening legal action. So, boy, oh boy, it's all kicking off in Major League Rugby over there as they head into their final series, which is unfortunate for them. And Simon has just corrected me saying that South Korea will play Hong Kong and the winner of that will play Tonga for the Rugby World Cup. Any comments on news items, or should we jump into the Pacific Four series?
Yeah, I think we should jump into the Pacific Four series. Unfortunately, I didn't see the first game between Canada and the USA.
Yeah, so Canada took on the USA. We're talking about the number three in the world in Canada against the USA, which is number seven in the world. Give you some context. Since 2019, obviously with COVID and stuff, these two have played each other quite a few times. And the record over since 2019 has been one win to the USA versus four to Canada coming into this game. The USA, and this was a wet game. It was not nice out there at all. The USA were also missing nine players due to the Premier 15 final over in the UK between Exeter and Saracens. So, hello. Has the women's game learnt anything from the men's game around club versus country arguments? That is a question I'm hoping to put to the USA head coach in the next few days when I'm supposed to be getting an interview with him. I believe Canada were also missing some players as well, but I don't know how many. Look, this wasn't a full-strength USA side against a team that they've lost most team. They did pretty well for the first 20 minutes, to be fair. It was 5-5 at that stage. Canada then pulled away. It was 5-17 at halftime. And in the second half, their forwards went to work and it finished off 36-5 to Canada. So a convincing win as their forwards really did dominate that that game. The USA really struggled to get out of their own half in that second half. Both of them had a bit of line-out struggles, but as I said, the conditions weren't great. This is also their first game of their season, so perhaps not such a surprise there. Only one try was scored by the backs, all the rest by the forwards, which probably gives you an idea as to the conditions and also the strength of the Canadian team, which is up front there. And they just powered their way to victory. So impressive performance by Canada there. In that one, just 4 months out from the Rugby World Cup, obviously here in New Zealand. So that's my summary of that game. Sophie Degude, the number eight for Canada and also their goal kicker and their captain, was also player of the match as well. So a one-lady army there as her team won the game. Moving on then to the second game. And for the folks, there was no, just let you know, there was no post-match interviews, media interviews, as I was the only person there who wanted to do post-match media interviews. And they thought it was a bit embarrassing having only one person for an international game, which I can understand. So New Zealand Rugby are helping me set up to get phone interviews with both teams. Robert Bull obviously missed the beginning of the show. Just a reminder, the reason that this was not on Sky was it because it was on Spark. This is a World Rugby event, not a New Zealand Rugby event. That's why it's on Spark rather than on Sky. So just a reminder about that. Heading into the Black Ferns then, 9 out of the 23 that faced France were in this team. So that is 14 changes coming into this game versus the last test against France. Now, I just want to clear some things up that apparently in the media release for this, for the squad, for this tournament, Blackwell and Elder, the vice captain, the captain from the November tour, were not listed as not available. And therefore, everyone thought they'd been dropped. Apparently, they should have been listed as unavailable. Les Elder is injured, and Elisa Blackwell is apparently not fit, which basically, not up to fitness levels. So both of them are in a race against time now to make the Rugby World Cup. They haven't been dropped because of not being good enough, which I think is what essentially we thought had happened when they weren't listed in that not available list. A massively changed Black Ferns team by Wayne Smith coming to this game, Stephen.
Yeah, you know, even sort of names you were scratching your head, you'd probably have to look back to last year's Farrah Palmer Cup just to even work out where these players come from. But listen, Paul, apart from a bit of a scratchy start, the longer that game went, the better they got.
Yeah, and we're talking about here a team, New Zealand, the Black Ferns ranks number two in the world against Australia, ranked number six. They've played 19 times coming to this game, and the Black Ferns have won every single game. So a certain amount of pressure on Wayne Smith to perform in his first outing as director of rugby, not head coach. But I mean, Australia started out very, very well. They dominated the first half of play, had the strongest scrum, really were getting their chop tackles and their pilfering really on key as the Black Ferns were going to ground too quickly and not getting the cleaners in there or giving time for the cleaners to get in there. They were saved perhaps by Aisha, the Wellington winger, scoring in the corner to pull things back to 5-10. I don't think that really reflected how dominant the Wallabies had been in that first half. They needed to have put more points on the board at that point, as we were to find out come the second period.
Yeah, I agree with that, Paul. I'm going to say you were there at the venue where did Australia have the use of any wind that there was there. I mean to say there was a lot of rain, but did they have the conditions behind them in the first half?
Look, unusually for Tauranga, there wasn't any wind today. Normally you do, because it's open pretty much to the harbour on one side, so you normally get a breeze off the ocean into that one. There wasn't a wind to speak of today. But there is definitely the idea that it was a downhill pitch because in the second half it switched. But I've got post-match interviews for this game, folks, and I will put them up on our pages. But I've not had time to process them in time for this game. Sorry, but Wayne Smith did say that look, they had very good. They had a very good halftime getting the messages over. Cronin Hansen did a good job talking to the scrum about rectifying that. Because they were in a mess in that first half, to be honest. They concentrate on those things I was talking about, being standing up in the tackle. Don't go to floor so quickly because you're giving them an opportunity to turn it over and improve that sort of thing. Initially it took them a while, but they did definitely get improve themselves at the breakdown. For this one, but you're right. In that second half, they turned it round, got the field possession, got the territory, made it very hard for Australia to get down the pitch and add to their score. They'll be very happy to have kept the Wallabies scoreless in that second half. But this is the first time ever that the Wallabies have led the Black Ferns at half time. So, which is so that look, their head, it is an improvement for them. they are heading in the right direction. It's good to see an improved Wallabies team, because they weren't playing like number six in the world in that first in that first half hour, at least.
And Paul, there was, you know, listen, there was some, you just felt a little momentum swing, especially just after the half time. All of a sudden, you started seeing that Black Ferns scrum just starting to dominate on the push, and once you saw that, you then saw the skills of Olsen Baker at number eight, and you know, you give her a good strong platform, and she'll burn the loose forwards if she's given half an opportunity. So in that alone, they've got a really good attacking weapon at the back of the scrums. In fact, I thought the loose forwards were very good today. Reynolds and the other try scorer, Bremner, I think it is, yep, who scored the try in the first half or second half. She was the first try scorer in the second half. I thought she was very good. And Roos, the lock in the middle row, also showed up as well. But they got a lot of mileage from their bench as well, I thought.
Yeah, look, and okay, let's talk about the white elephant, the big elephant in the room here. The only reason that the Bremner got to score a try was because the previous try was disallowed. Now, one of the things that's been creeping into the game over the past year or two has been players pre-latching on, or basically binding to the ball carrier before they've made contact with anybody, and basically having two players charging into one, which is illegal, or used to be illegal, but basically was never called by the referee. So there was a clarification that came in at the beginning of this season, which was that you're allowed one latcher and no more onto a player with the ball carrier. And that latcher had to keep their feet, I think it was. There's also some, which perhaps, let's be honest, referees don't talk about players or don't make players keep their feet at the ruck anyway nowadays. So that one hasn't been fully improved, but fully introduced. But there were a bunch of new tech. Well, I guess what you'd hear commentators call technical law changes or law variations or law clarifications, whatever you want to call them, at the beginning of this year, that basically no one knew about. And as Stephen has put into his on Twitter, who honestly knew this? Well, yes, me, I'll be honest. I saw that. And as soon as I saw that they'd gone to the TMO, it was like, oh, they've done this because of pre-latching. And yes, that's what it was.
I knew you'd know that. nobody else did, though.
And whilst it wasn't talked about during the actual interview, Wayne Smith did was like, why didn't you guys ask me about this? He's like, oh, it was only a hand on. It's not really a, ooh, was it really a proper latch? It's like, okay. So look, I think, a lot of people were like, is this, they haven't seen this called any games before, but it doesn't surprise me that Wayne Smith is one of those guys who's gone, oh, where can I get an attacking advantage from? This is how I can do it. Okay, folks, let's see if we can get away with this. And he's found out he can't, basically. So, yes, look, he's been a bit cheeky. Is it a latch? Well, the hand's bound, but the shoulder isn't. So, therefore, it's not bound. Therefore, we can, okay. You were sailing as close to the wind as you thought you could get away with, and you found out you can't. So there we go. I think that, to me, that's what I think.
They probably didn't even know themselves, the players.
The players might not, but I'm sure Wayne Smith did.
Yeah, he'd know. And you should mention you're a local resident as well. Paul's probably his drinking buddy as well. So.
No, I'm not. Wayne Smith is. So I live in Waihee, which is the cheap part of the area, and Wayne Smith lives in the Bearwell Off area, which is Waihee Beach, along with Warren Gatland and JK and a few other rugby luminaries who live in Waihee Beach. Look, it's I think he was a bit surprised by that one, but to me, I think it was they were trying to get away with a fast one. And look, will that get called every time? No. Will it get called when it's a try-scoring move? Yes. And that's going to be the difference. You'll be able to get away with it if you don't get over the try line, but if you do get over the try line, you won't. It's one of those ones that they'll look at in that situation, but won't look at other times. Because I think the move before was also pre-latching as well. So as I saw it twice, it was like, okay, yeah, this isn't an accidental pre-latch either. If you've got, you've done it twice for you had, and basically it's called what used to be called a flying wedge in the good old days, but the flying wedge would have like five or seven players in it. So it's a mini flying wedge, basically, is what they're trying to disallow. But yes, it left everyone, or it left a lot of people baffled as to what was going on at that point. Yeah, well done to the Black Ferns for turning this around, because I say in that first half, it did look like we were on path for the first ever Wallaroos win against the Black Ferns. It wasn't to be. The Black Ferns take on Canada next Sunday, which should be a cracker. Canada number three in the world, Black Ferns number two in the world. Coming into these games, I doubt it's going to have changed much from these results. But that should be a cracking game. Pardon me, next Sunday up in Auckland, and that's preceded by the USA versus Australia. The USA number seven, Australia number six. And I say the Australia not playing like number six for a good part of that game. So I think the Australians would go into that one as favourites. But I think the USA will have some of their players back from the Premier 15s final. So again, that should be a cracker as well. Go on, Stephen. You need to take yourself off mute. You need to take yourself off mute.
I was going to say, I decided to look at pre-match again. Now, apparently, referees can give out a red card for in the pre-match warm-up or as before the players actually walk out on the field if some sort of offence is incurred during the warm-up session, or basically as the players walk out of the tunnel. So, for example, if two teams are walking out together and there's a bit of a stoush before they hit the field, a red card can be given out.
I think this is more along the lines of you can't tell the referee to fuck off before the game starts.
I can't believe he said that. it's interesting. We there's a lot of laws, too many laws.
This is one common thing that you'll get from this show, folks. If you're new, the law book is too complicated for referees to referee the game properly. It needs to be simplified. So that's what we need to do. I don't think we can get down to David Moffat's five or seven laws entirely. I don't think we can get down to that few, but I do think we can get down to a lot less than we have right now and still keep the game in a form that we recognise as a game, as rugby.
We need to bring David Moffat back and starting a campaign.
Right. Okay, off you go. I'll see you later. good luck with that one. As I say, He's heading in the right direction, but he's just overstepped the mark again as normal. Simon, it's very dangerous. Now, this is for anyone who is thinking about suing us for this comment. This comment comes from you, not from New Zealand Sport Radio. This is a listener comment. It is very dangerous to listen to David Moffat. He is a wingnut. I'm not sure I wouldn't go that far. I think he's whilst heading in the right direction, he's gone too far in that direction. With reducing the number of laws around it. So two cracking games on the line for next Sunday. Look, there's a couple of shames around the scheduling for this. First off, look, players having to miss this because of the Premier 15s over there in England. As I say, I will put that question to the USA and the Canadian head coaches in the next couple of days. But also, this is on the three weekends, which are the three finals weekends of Super Rugby, which means everyone in New Zealand is focused on quarterfinal, semi-final, final of Super Rugby. They're not focused on Black Ferns playing the Pacific Four series on the same three weekends. And to me, that seems to have been, the scheduling of this one does seem to have been very strange, really, when you've got after Super Rugby finishes, the final is on the 18th of June, I'm trying to find out when the Ireland series start, and whether there's some sort of gap that there could have been in there, because the Ireland series starts on the 29th of June with the Maori All Blacks. So actually, so the first game is on the 2nd of July. So that means that there was a gap, or at least a 1 week gap there between the two. So perhaps not long enough to fit this entire tournament in, but you could have had at least one round in that gap where the New Zealand public weren't focused on the men's game. Anything else, Stephen? And as you can tell from Stephen's silence, he's saying lots of things, but with mute on, but shaking his head. So no, there's nothing. He's saying nothing with lots of words.
No, I'll be out at Ōrākei Domain this weekend for that top of the table clash between the University and Grammar Tech. Cannot wait.
So yeah, head down there if you're in Auckland. If you're in Waihee, don't forget Thursday night for Do You Know Sport at the Rugby Club as the A's take on the B's. And also I will probably be at filming the B's on Saturday as well. So come over and say hello. Thank you, everyone. Don't forget to join us again 8 p.m. next Monday. And also if you're into your NRL, the boys will be, not very chipper after the Warriors lost yet again on a Wednesday night, but do join us for the standoff show with I think Bird Food is the name of the show as the
Hell
Eagles
yeah. Beat, Hell yeah.
beat the Warriors. So do join Brad and Richie for that one, and stay safe, folks. Have a good week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.